Okay, so we played a little hot potato in terms of who was going to present this talk. I suppose I got the potato. So I'm Jenny Gubler. I'm a viral hepatitis epidemiologist with the Michigan Department of Health and Human Services. I challenge you to say that three times fast. So I think sexually transmitted hepatitis C is kind of a newly emerging health issue in the MSM population. So I'm assuming most people aren't super familiar with it. So I'll start by briefly going over hep C transmission and infection. I'll talk very briefly about co-infections between HIV and hep C, and then I'll really just focus on talking about the cluster and how we've kind of approached it, since it is a novel kind of situation. So hepatitis E virus is a bloodborne pathogen, meaning it's going to spread from one person to another via contaminated blood. And the infection causes inflammation of the liver, so it's going to affect things like nutrient processing, blood filtering, and infection fighting. Typically, when you think of hepatitis C transmission, you're going to think of IDU, injection drug use. That's definitely the most common mode. Some of the less common modes are things like healthcare exposures, like needle sticks. There's also the sharing of personal care items, like razors and toothbrushes. There's unregulated body art, and then sexual contact involving blood, which is really the kind of focus of this talk. So when we're talking about monogamous heterosexual couples, where one partner is infected with hep C, there's a very low risk of sexual transmission. However, that's not necessarily the case for the MSM population. There's only been a few clusters that have been reported in the literature. Most of those are coming out of Europe. Here in the United States, there was a cluster that was investigated over about 5 years in New York City. I believe there's also been one in Boston. And it's worth noting that these sexually transmitted hepatitis C cases were preceded by things like HIV and extensive STD histories. So some of the high-risk sexual behavior that could result in transmission of hepatitis C would be things like unprotective, receptive, anal intercourse with ejaculation, use of sex toys and other fomites, insertive or receptive fisting, group sex, anal douching, and ulcerative STDs also increase risk of transmission. So when you're infected with hepatitis C, so the average person typically starts out with a normal healthy liver. Over time, like 20 to 30 years, the person will start to develop fibrosis, cirrhosis, eventually, typically, liver disease, liver cancer, the need for organ transplant, and possibly eventually death. So that's the bad news. Lots of scary things. So hepatitis C is currently associated, it's the leading cause of cancer mortality in the United States. When while other nationally notifiable conditions are declining, mortality from hepatitis C is actually increasing. But the good news, however, is that hepatitis C is now curable. So you've probably all seen commercials for some of these new medications that have been released, advertising up to 99% cure rates. So that's really exciting. For individuals who are co-infected with HIV and hepatitis C, the rate of progression of morbidity and mortality is actually accelerated, and even more so if individuals are not on antiretroviral therapy. So if you look at these figures, they're illustrating how cirrhosis is greatly accelerated in HIV-positive individuals, and survival really declines pretty quickly for people who are not on antiretroviral therapy. So in terms of our cluster in Detroit that we're currently investigating, it was actually detected by a nurse practitioner at one of our HIV clinics in Detroit. I think she might be here somewhere, Debbie. She's in the back. We love you, Debbie. Thank you. So Debbie actually detected something early this year, and she called us at the viral hepatitis unit and said, "Hey guys, I think there might be something going on here." So she had six patients who had recently seroconverted. So she had no negative hep C results for them, and now they're testing positive. They were all MSM, they're all HIV positive, and no one had a history of IDU. So it kind of perked our ears as epidemiologists. So she actually continued to look into her data, and she found a couple more individuals for us. We performed a data match between our Michigan Disease Surveillance System, so it's our homegrown system, of our Hep C cases with the HIV cases that were in EHARs. And we also talked to our Detroit DIS staff, explained what was going on, and they provided a few other names. So once we had this list of patients, we really had to come up with a case definition to draw the lines as to who was a case and who wasn't, who needed follow-up and who didn't. And this is our current case definition. So we're focusing on anyone who tested RNA positive from January 1st of 2014 to the present. We're focusing on risk factors of MSM and no IDU. And then we limited it for right now to the geographic area of southeastern Michigan. So this is really where most of the people in Michigan live. It's most populated. Detroit is indicated by that red dot on the map. Detroit is its own local health jurisdiction. And then we included the three surrounding counties. We also have suspect cases. So these are people who maybe we have an antibody positive result on, limited epi info, and so we're following up on these further. We also have a list of contacts that we are following up on. So here's how it looks as of right now. Remember, in February we started with six cases. We are now up to 22. We have 11 suspect cases and over 30 contacts. In terms of just the cases, their ages range from 21 to 48. We have excluded the baby boomers since we can't really be sure if they have acquired the virus through sexual transmission or maybe some of those other typically associated baby boomer risk factors. All of these cases are male. All but one are African American. Our one outlier is a Hispanic individual. They all currently have genotype 1A from what we know. That might not be that informative since 1A is the most common, especially in Michigan. And most of them live in the Detroit area. So two-thirds are living in Detroit, another third are living in those surrounding counties. One individual did report recent IDU history, but it was very recent, so we're not really considering that the cause of his infection. They're all HIV positive. They've all identified as MSM or MSM-bi, and they all had pretty extensive STD histories prior to testing positive for Hep C. So in terms of networks, there were some pretty exciting network talks yesterday. This is where we're at right now. So each box stands for one person unless otherwise noted. The red boxes are people who've tested RNA positive. The blue boxes are people who've tested RNA negative. And then the gray are kind of to be determined. So these are contacts that we're still following up on and bringing in. Here's our current flow. So I wanted to include this for posting later because I think people may reference this later on. So I'm going to start with the blue box in the center. So I'm the viral hepatitis epidemiologist. So as positive cases are coming in via either electronic lab reporting or provider referrals, if they meet our case definition, I'm referring them out to the local health jurisdictions. So that's either a DIS staff member, CD, STD, HIV staff member, and they're doing case investigations. So they're bringing everyone in through the STD clinic for blood draws. They're performing contact tracing, providing HCV counseling, linkage to care, so on and so forth. Anyone who's testing RNA positive, we're holding onto those specimens to send to the CDC lab for the GHOST testing. I'm going to skip this. I've included it just for posting purposes later in case anybody wants to know what I just explained from the flowchart. And the GHOST testing, so this stands for Global Hepatitis Outbreak Surveillance Technology, so it's molecular surveillance. So if you're familiar with the HIV networks that they're using with molecular data, this is the same thing, but just for Hep C. So we're pretty excited to do this. So as you can imagine, since this is kind of a novel situation, you typically don't perform contact tracing for hepatitis C cases. It's been interesting to get this up and running and off the ground. I see some laughs. So we're coordinating between multiple organizations, multiple jurisdictions. There is a lot of red tape involved. to make it more interesting, in Michigan we don't get negatives reported to us, so finding seroconversions has been interesting. We've had lots of gaps in reporting with onboarding of electronic labs from hospitals and healthcare systems. We definitely, this is probably no surprise, but we don't have enough staff to do any of this. So the clinics have, and the state lab have had to take on more responsibility with processing samples. Some aspects of this, sorry, this is my luck, this is how it goes. Some aspects of the situation have been completely new to everyone involved. Typically, you're not talking to someone about their hepatitis C infection through sexual transmission. And we've also had an LGV outbreak occurring simultaneously to add more fuel to the fire. Okay, some things worth noting, just I know I'm over time, I'm wrapping up. There is a large amount of anonymous sex happening through these hookup apps. Jacked, Grindr, and Adam for Adam seem to be the most common in Detroit. All of our cases are currently in care, but only about 50% are virally suppressed. And we were able to supplement contact tracing using previous syphilis and LGV investigations that have occurred in the last 2 years. So, just to summarize, so this is a newly emerging public health issue. Co-infections of HIV and Hep C can be really serious threats to patient health. So we are currently continuing to investigate and expand our search. We are summarizing and disseminating our findings. And most importantly, we're meeting with providers and getting everybody on board with the current clinical guidelines, linking people to care. So a big thank you, I have to send out, and then I will stop, to all these people. So I know some of you are in the room. This is in alphabetical order, so please do not be offended. I'm not playing favorites. But I really have to say thank you to everybody in Detroit. I know you've taken on yet another task. You've done it very gracefully. I have to bow down to you. So with that, I will take any questions. I know I'm over time, but...